morning, everyone. It's Thursday, July 15, 2005. This is the House Special Committee on Budget, Subcommittee on Human Services and Public Safety. Today, we deal with very important legislation relating to the meth package that's been a kind of a coordinated approach with both the House and the Senate. So we'll be opening a work session on House Bill 2485 first, and we'll kind of deal with both the meth package from the Senate and the House so that we can get a sense of the coordination between these bills. Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, before you is a memo. It should be the exact same memo that you got yesterday afternoon. So if you wrote notes on it, don't be afraid to use that one. Keep in mind, House Bill 2485 is one portion of a joint House and Senate attempt or effort by the Judiciary Committees to put together a comprehensive meth package. There was a work group of two senators, Senators Burdick and Beyer, and two representatives, Representatives Krieger and McPherson, who've worked for quite a bit during the session to put together the packages contained in 2485 and in Senate Bill 907. Keep in mind also that there are two companion funding bills. For you, that's House Bill 54 or 5174, which will also be work session today. And I'll sort of talk about all these together if that's all right with you. Without going into too much degree in the policy that's included in 2485 and Senate Bill 907, there are some bullets there on the first page of the memo that summarize major components of it. If you have specific questions, judiciary staff is here to answer them much better than I can, since they've done the bulk of the work on the policy sides. The combination of the two bills, they create, modify a number of crimes relating to the manufacturing, possession, and distribution of meth, the precursors and other materials used in the manufacturing of meth. It creates or modifies crimes related to child neglect and dependent mistreatment. Those are included in 907, not in front of you today. It establishes a grant program through the Criminal Justice Commission relating to drug courts, in this case the expansion and or creation of new drug courts. There's also funding in this package to make sure that four drug courts in counties that are losing federal funding are continued. There's resources added to the Department of Justice's District Attorney Assist Program, as well as the Department of Corrections Alternative Incarceration Addictions Program, specifically for substance abuse treatment and housing after folks leave and go back into the community on their transitional leave. It expands crimes of arsons to include fires and explosions resulting from the manufacturing of meth. It requires the Board of Pharmacy to adopt rules that classify certain ingredients, including ephedrine, as a Schedule III drug, which means it will require a prescription. And it finally is another major issue, authorized the Department of Human Services to terminate food stamp benefits for specific actions relating to manufacture, delivery of meth, and using food stamps as a way to purchase certain precursors and other substances in the manufacturing of meth. There are summaries of both these policy bills, the one in front of you, 2485, and Senate Bill 907 attached, which goes into significantly more detail than I just did. As some of you may have seen a memo from the four legislators I mentioned earlier that set things in priority order in terms of Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3 of those items that that they wanted funded. I forgot to bring a copy of that memo today, but regardless of that, the money available put front by the co-chairs were able to fund all of those things that they wanted funded at some level. And if you turn back in your package to a table that says funding for meth package, it looks like this. I'll quickly go through those items that total $7.1 million. The first four items have already passed out of the Senate full committee yesterday afternoon on the way to the Senate floor. It includes $1.5 million to Department of Corrections for increased incarceration costs resulting from some of the changes in the crime. Most of that is in Senate Bill 907. It includes $900,000 to the Department of Correction for what I mentioned is sort of the housing and post-release treatment for the offenders that are coming out of the alternative incarceration addiction programs. These are the programs, if you recall, in the Department of Corrections budget that are located at Powder River and Baker and at Coffee Creek as intensive treatment programs for drug addiction and substance abuse addiction generally. There is money for two attorneys and one investigator to assist district attorneys and law enforcement agencies. Those are funds just between $500,000 and $600,000 going to the Department of Justice. There is $450,000 for the Public Defense Services Commission to respond to the new crimes and provide defense services that they anticipate as a result of the changes in the bills and other funding. Those are things that were in the Senate side. Now, the rest of the items are in front of you today. There is $942,000 to continue existing drug courts in Benton, Marion, Mall here in Multnomah County. These are drug courts that have been funded with federal funds, various federal grants up to this point, and that are losing their federal funding. This would be funds that would go to the Oregon Judicial Department. There are $40,000 to the Department of Agriculture for costs of adopting rules for standard to make certifications of non-toxic dye for anhydrous ammonia additives. And it also includes money for cost of task force by 2485. There's one quarter-time part-time position associated with this. There is $88,000 to the Oregon State Police for additional demand for forensics work. That's a phase-in of a position over the biennium. There is $2.5 million in a special appropriation of the emergency fund for the drug courts. I'll come back to that in a little bit. And finally, there is a position in the Criminal Justice Commission to develop, operate, and evaluate the grant program, the $2.5 million and other drug court programs in the state. So that total package between both the House and Senate version or components of the overall meth package is $7.1 million. I think that pretty much lays out what is in front of you. There are, on the second and third pages, in 5174, the conceptual amendment there, items 1 through 5, which I just went through on the table. There's really no difference there, except to mention on the $2.5 million general fund, there is language at the bottom of page 2 and a budget note at the top of page 3 regarding that special appropriation, basically requiring the Criminal Justice Commission to develop the program in the sense of putting together the various eligibility requirements, who is going to be eligible, what the criteria will be, work on performance measures, and first report to the Joint Interim Judiciary Committee if there's a joint committee, or the separate ones if there are not. Joint Interim Judiciary Committee, report to them, and then after that report, come to the E-Board for that funding, that $2.5 million, and then to release that money to be used for the grant program. And, Mr. Chair, I think that's at least a fast summary of what's in front of you this morning between the two bills.
All right, so basically in the House half of this package, the bill is divided into three different aspects. One is dealing with toxic waste and the need for landowners to take action within 6 months or be subject to abatement proceedings and those kinds of things, and criminal consequences for those that are involved with illegal dumping of toxic waste. There's the meth chemical components, the precursors, and the Schedule 3 aspects, which takes pseudoephedrine and other drugs and components that need to be controlled, and puts them under greater control and gives criminal consequences for those that misappropriate or misuse those. And then the third is the tools for dealing with this meth problem as far as the addicts are concerned, which include the drug courts and other things that can be used. There's also one that says that if you're receiving food stamps and you're doing drugs or manufacturing drugs, that you can lose that benefit as long as it doesn't affect other members of the family. I mean, there's certainly other considerations that go into it. Are there other aspects of it besides those three basic components?
I think you've picked up the major components, at least.
Okay. Are there questions about the bill from members of the committee?
Not a question, but a comment.
Representative Boone.
And I made some notes here, too, about some of the things that this is doing that's really going to be a bigger help in reality than it is on paper, and that is the expanding the arson crime, because so many volunteer fire departments do not have the resources or the equipment when they come across a fire in a building that has that now becomes a toxic waste issue. When you're talking about rescuing people, pets, whatever, it's a whole new ball game, and these people are not equipped to do that, nor is it fair for them. Issue that I wanted to bring up, too, that I'm really glad that is being addressed by this and will be addressed by this, is the, I don't know the exact numbers, but I'm going to say, just to be safe, 50% higher numbers of foster children because of the meth issue. And these will be addressing these will make crimes of people who, related to child abuse and neglect, when they're using meth or manufacturing or have children in the houses or around this product. And then I guess finally I'd like to say something about how important it is for another bill that we've passed through. I can't remember the number, the 2278, I think the four additional judges to handle the additional issues, meth issues with drug courts and all the prosecution. If we're going to be doing all this in this meth package, we're going to need that. It's going to be very important to have these additional positions to handle the court cases.
I think everything that you're saying is certainly correct. There does have to be a coordination, and if we don't have the additional judges, we can't do additional drug courts. And I know in the counties that don't have them, they're just begging for that.
And particularly
kind of
if we're putting in some money to expand some of those on the Far East Side, East Oregon.
I might also mention that, you know, this the idea of placing sodium metal on the restricted list is probably not a big deal. But when you put pseudoephedrine and ephedrine onto the class or the Schedule 3 controlled substance list, what we're basically saying is that this is such an important chemical in the manufacture of meth that even though it's going to inconvenience us as citizens, in that we may have to use a substitute medication, or if we want to use that medication, that we need to call. It can be done over the phone, our doc, and have a prescription given. That is an inconvenience that many people are going to be really unhappy with, and I'm not happy with it. But the difficulty is coming up with the alternative and the telling issue, and that's something I think that we have to make sure that the media understands and that the people understand, is that between 70% and 75%. Of the medications that contain pseudoephedrine and ephedrine do not go to citizens who have colds, but go to the manufacturer of meth in Oregon. And that is a crucial, staggering statistic, that when people understand that the majority of those medications are going to be used to make methamphetamine, then it requires, like all wars, a certain amount of sacrifice. And this is a war that we have, and the fate of a next generation is at stake in many ways. And you said 50%. I've seen 70% of foster children currently going into care now are as a result of meth, and primarily meth, but drug-related issues. And And so the numbers are staggering. The effects on families are staggering. This is going to take a generation to deal with, but we have to start. And we, law enforcement has already been starting. They've been working on this, but we have to give them these additional tools. And if we have 70 to 75% of pseudoephedrine and ephedrine going to manufacture of meth in what are deemed mom and pop labs, rural small labs in Oregon, then we have to take the action necessary to stop that availability of that product. And so that's part of what we're doing here. Representative Boone, Representative Hansen.
Well, I totally agree with you, and I have had the opportunity to say to some people who have called and asked about that, particularly about needing a doctor's prescription now. And when you consider, and I tell people this, when you consider that the property crimes that are being committed because of this problem in neighborhoods, and all these, the foster children, additional foster children that are being created, that positions for them, they're needing homes, they don't have enough homes for them, all these reasons, and I think that's a small price to pay. And I'm a daily Sudafed user because of my sinus condition.
That wasn't coming out. I mean, that is the medication for it.
Yeah. But I consider that not a problem. I haven't tried the new medications yet that don't have it to see if there's any combination. But I am so, well, it's not even an issue with me. And I assume that when people figure out that this is all you're going to need to do, and I'm thinking maybe, and this is just a thought, so any doctors of you out there, maybe the doctors who could help us out by saying a person doesn't have a doctor already and they need a prescription, they're not on the health plan, whatever reason, they're going to be the people who it's going to affect, and maybe they can't afford it. Maybe doctors can help us out and say, we'll give you this one time, we'll do a clinic, people come in, and maybe they can help them, give them a prescription, get them going on this, if that's necessary. It's just a thought. It's something that maybe some of the medical profession can do to help out, because if the people gather around and get this all in hand as much as we can, that's going to make a huge difference for these small, like you said, mom and pop labs. They're really going to have to work hard to get this stuff if we make it a little bit, every little bit we can do to help.
You bring up a good point. I think that maybe we can contact the Board of Medical Examiners to see if they have some suggestions on an approach where we can get help from the physicians in coordinating something that would allow that to take place. Mm-hmm. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not concerned at all in terms of the Sudafed type drug prescriptions. My guess would be if we have a coordinated federal policy, that it'll be a controlled substance in a relatively short time nationally. And I think there are some good pharmaceutical replacements for that particular drug that in a matter of relative short time, people won't even notice the difference. My big concern and question for Doug Wilson is, strategically, when we talk about expanding the drug courts, which is a very good, effective tool, have there been discussions made in terms, we know that the drug courts don't work unless there's drug treatment availability. And with the dramatic cutbacks to the Oregon Health Plan, strategically, how are we going to make sure that the treatment is available for the people participating in the expanded drug courts? Has that been discussed, or has it been identified as a problem?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, it has been discussed and identified as a problem for sure. I think if you look at the text of some of the language in here, the expectation is that 2.5 will be used mainly for coordinators of the drug courts and for substance abuse treatment. And I would guess...
So there's an expectation that the drug treatment's coming out of the 2.5 million?
Part of that 2.5 should be used for substance abuse. I think the line, I'm looking for the line that
I've got it
written here.
It's third from the bottom.
Yeah.
It says applications for grants should be, we're on page 2, the last paragraph, which is a budget note. Applications for grants should be formulated by groups representing the various participants in drug court operations, including judges, court administrators, district attorneys, defense attorneys, substance abuse treatment providers.
And actually, Mr. Chair, the line above that says these funds are to be primarily used for drug court coordinators and substance abuse treatment. That doesn't mean that there aren't treatment dollars elsewhere coming out of the DHS budget or community budgets. Keep in mind, they're currently beyond the four drug courts that are funded here. There are already drug courts in 21 other counties of some shape and form. The 2.5 here is to create new drug courts or expand existing ones. So we're talking about new capacity with this 2.5. I know some have expressed concern that people need to take a look at the prioritization of the use of alcohol and drug treatment dollars that are available currently and see whether they're being channeled in the right direction. But keep in mind, and the folks on this subcommittee probably have a better understanding of that than I do, in terms of there are many demands for substance abuse dollars, treatment dollars, from not only drug courts and the folks that they, for lack of a better term, serve, but other people in the DHS system. So,
well, it's a fine line in terms of what we don't want to create is a system where the drug treatment dollars are rationed out in a way that you have to commit a crime or be part of the adjudication system before you get to treatment. You know, it might work a little better if there were incentives to get to treatment before you end up in the going to court.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, keep in mind the success of drug courts in large part are bringing together all those entities that the chair read, including the substance treatment providers out in the community. The drug courts don't work unless everyone really is coming together and working as a team. And the expectation for the grant program is that that team needs to be a complete team as they bring an application together or forward for a grant.
I think that's why we're going to be able to make it through this inconvenience of the prescriptions for pseudoephedrine drugs, is that we'll get the additional help that we need from the medical community, from the pharmaceutical community, from the pharmacists, to help make sure that that doesn't become a stumbling block for too many people. Representative, did you have anything?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions. One for you and Mr. Wilson. Yeah. What's the mechanics that are going to happen here now? Does the Senate pass their bill? Is one contingent upon the other? Is there going to be a conference committee? If there's some questions on any of this, or has that been discussed between the...
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, the Senate passed out their package yesterday out of full. It's on the way to the floor. It is a companion, so it has certain elements of the comprehensive package, while the House component has different set of parts of the total package. So I think they are two different bills, so there's not a necessary for a treat or a conference committee, but it was viewed as a comprehensive package, so with the expectation that both of them would pass and both would be funded as they're outlined in the table that I went through.
Thank you. Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Wisnett.
Not really a follow up, except my other question. The summary that Mr. Wilson provided us says requires the Board of Pharmacy to adopt rules to do all this stuff. The bill itself doesn't seem to be specific in requiring the Board of Pharmacy, and it doesn't give a date. Am I wrong in that? When they will do this?
Just say it one more time.
Okay. The bill itself doesn't seem very directive on the Board of Pharmacy about doing this, and doesn't give a date. Am I missing that when they're going to do this?
Mr. Chair, and if Heidi can confirm that, but on Section 12 of page 8, it does talk, there is a date that says no later than July 1, 2006, and I'm assuming that that is a the date that relates to what Representative Wisnett was saying.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, Heidi Moad, Judiciary Committee Counsel. Mr. Wilson is correct. There is an effective date of the Schedule 3 requirement of July 1st, 2006. That gives the Board of Pharmacy time to go through their rulemaking procedures.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Thank you. So, the Board of Pharmacy is going to look at this. It still doesn't seem to be directive up on them. They have to look at this and come back and or implement it July the 1st, whatever they can, or is this, will these be prescription drugs at that time?
Mr. Chair and Representative Wisnett, if you look at Section 11, Subsection 3A, it requires the Board of Pharmacy to adopt rules to classify ephedrine, pseudoephedrine, and phenylpropanolamine as Schedule 3 controlled substances. The Schedule 3 classification may be modified by the board if they find that restriction on products containing these items does not significantly reduce the number of methamphetamine laboratories within the state. So there is the requirement to go to Schedule 3. We have left open the possibility if the meth lab numbers are not effectively being reduced to back off of that, or alternatively, to increase. I mean, we've left the Board of Pharmacy the ability to change that scheduling as they see fit. But, yes, they have to do the Schedule 3 designation by July 1st, 2006.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think based upon that information and what the Chair said, I think this is important. I hope the Board of Pharmacy will maybe open up some of their meetings to the public and help educate the public, help us in our effort to educate the public on this problem. And we... how we think this could help us get a leg up in the war on meth. Thank you very much. One other question, Mr. Chair, or comment?
Yes.
And Heidi may want to stay in. The budget notes, to me, are a little troublesome in that they're so specific in drug court. I'd rather they, and I think the commission can have the leeway and still report on the overall effect, not just the drug courts. I'd like to see the commission come back and look at what we've done and say this worked, this didn't work. You know, you need to do this and that. But right now it's just specifically on the drug courts.
Representative Chair Richardson, Representative Wisnett, I have seen the budget notes for the first time this morning in final draft, and so I'm not completely prepared to comment on that. I know in our discussions, the work group has met with Mr. Wilson. We have discussed the idea of sort of not just focusing on the drug court piece, but the overarching Senate Bill 907, for example, contains the sentencing enhancements for manufacture of methamphetamine, and I think there is some desire to evaluate that next session as well, and frankly over the interim. And I think both Chair Burdick and Chair Krieger, who have worked so hard on these on this package, intend to follow the progress of what we have done very closely.
Thank you for those comments, because our bill focuses and has more money for drug courts. I understand why that's in there, but I don't think you can just look at the drug courts and say our meth package is successful or not successful while looking at all these components. We've all talked about, and members of this committee have been on the public safety committee. We know that state police, we don't see an increase here in state police. And so I hope this commission would look again and see, we want to treat, but also do we need to help enforcement at that area in the state police. So, again, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Heidi, for your comments.
Hey, and Heidi, you need to be applauded for the work you've done. I mean, this has been several months of coordination and excellent work and effort that you've put in, and we appreciate it very, very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
There is an issue of one possible amendment that needs to be vetted for just a few moments. It's a clarification. And what I propose to do is to have some information on it and then take a brief recess and determine whether or not we should go forward with it or not go forward with it. But it's for our committee to have to deal with this. And so I would like to invite Paulette Pyle to come forward. Also, would you provide a copy to Heidi so that she could look this over?
Mm-hmm.
And then if you would explain what the concerns are and from your portion of the agriculture industry, and then we'll kind of go from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize for the lateness of this amendment. Terry Witt has been tending to this bill, and he had an emergency family health problem out of state, and he took off, and I'm here. I did pass this out to Paulette Pyle with Oregonians for Food and Shelter. I did pass this out to our members just to have them review it. And if you go to Section 21 and go down to approximately line 23, when you're talking about the members of the committee that the Ag Department of Ag appoint.
Can I just for a moment so that we can all get there, please?
Okay.
It's on page 11.
Actually, it's on
page 11,
13.
Yeah.
Page 13 of this draft.
Oh, I'm working from the June 27th
no.
amendment.
This is a conceptual amendment to you.
Right. If
we don't have
okay.
No. Sorry.
Page again, 13. Page 13. Okay, we're...
Mr. Chairman, what I think I'll do is read how we want it amended, and then we can discuss why we want it amended. If you start with 22, I guess, line 22,
okay, wait,
A, 4A.
Just a moment. Before we go in there, because we're jumping so far ahead, and there are many people who don't have this in front of them.
Okay.
So if we just go into how you want the wording to be, there's no...
Context.
No context.
Okay.
And so would you first read how it's worded, and then we can... Then we can go forward. So let's do that first.
Certainly. So you want me to start under?
The relevant provisions are Section 21, Sub 3, Sub A, right?
Sub 3, 4, the committee may go down under F, 4.
Okay, got it. At the very, very bottom of the
page. And then Sub A.
All right, so we're talking about the last five lines on page 13.
Right. Review all relevant scientific and economic data on non-toxic dyes or other additives for anhydrous ammonia that are submitted for certification to, change the word by to,
okay,
the State Department.
You're already jumping into changes. So I want to first do the context of what we've got.
Oh, okay.
Talk about what we're changing.
I see. Okay. You want to do the opposite of what I was thinking. Okay. In essence, what this will do, this amendment will do, it'll guarantee that any manufacturer of an additive like Glotel, that's the subject we've been talking about, or the additive we've been talking about, that they want to add to anhydrous ammonia, that manufacturer has to certify that they have it scientifically validated before they can put the additive in. And let me give you an example of why that may create a problem for us. For instance, if you have a consumer product like wheat, the wheat growers produce wheat. Like the Pendleton grain growers or the folks that sell anhydrous ammonia want to put an additive in, the manufacturer has to prove that it's scientifically okay for the environment, for consumers, et cetera, before they go forward with it. Yes. Because, well, we have, it should be domestically, but, yeah, internationally we do a lot of exports. So if you have wheat going into Japan and they say, okay, show us your scientific data that says Glotel, for instance, is an additive that is safe, and we don't have that information, then we dump the wheat. I mean, we're sitting at the Port of Portland with a bunch of wheat that they won't let us export. So we just want to clarify that any manufacturer that comes in, they can't just come in and convince a distributor that it's okay without the proper information.
Okay, so the current wording, and I'm going to just pick up on line 42, it says, well, in fact, let me read it the way it is, and then we can talk about the changes you'd like.
Okay.
So I'm starting on 41. It says, so it's 4 sub A. So, you know, the committee may review all relevant scientific and economic data on non-toxic dyes and other additives for anhydrous ammonia that are submitted for certification by the State Department of Agriculture under Section 20 of this 2005 Act and shall, at a minimum, review scientifically valid data for each submitted non-toxic dye or other additive regarding, and then there's a list of things. Okay, that's the current wording. And your concern is that it is not specific enough in that it doesn't require
manufacturers
to certify?
Right.
Okay, so with that in mind, what proposals do you have to change that would make it clearer?
Okay, let me read it again with the changes, okay?
Yes.
Review all relevant scientific and economic data on non-toxic dyes or other additives for anhydrous ammonia that are submitted for certification to the State Department of Agriculture under Section 20 of this 2005 Act, period. ODA shall, at a minimum, require the manufacturer of any product to be certified to provide sufficient scientifically valid data for each submitted non-toxic dye or other additive to determine, colon, A, impact on specific crop yields. Specific out of there, and the rest of it remains the same.
Okay, specific, so that it's just not all crop yields?
Right.
Impact on, okay, so basically, what we presently have, it says that the relevant data is to be submitted by the State Department of Agriculture, and you're saying it should be corrected to say that it should be submitted to the State Department
right.
of Ag, and then you're adding that at a minimum it should require the manufacturer of
right.
any product to be certified to provide sufficient scientific data.
Exactly.
So you'd like to put the burden on the manufacturer
exactly.
to do that rather than have the State Department of Agriculture merely submitting it.
Correct.
What you're
saying? That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Are there questions on what has been brought up on this? What I'm going to do is, because I'd like to take a 5 to 10 minute recess and go and talk with Representative Krieger about this. But on the other hand, we're here, and if this is not a meaningful change that is important to a segment for clarification, it's not going to hurt anything, then we have the ability to do this. But I want to talk to you first. Representative Hansen.
Well, I don't have a problem with the substance of it, but I'm thinking in terms of the protocols of a conceptual amendment that at this point in the work session, without having it developed by LC, I think this is a question of policy, not a question of the dollar amounts. And I'm wondering about the appropriateness of moving this as a conceptual amendment.
I can tell you that the amendment actually has been requested, and the phone call I made before we began was, where is it at in the process? And LC said that we would have it, if they could have it in probably an hour,
mm-hmm.
because they're working on it already. And so the decision I made was, do I adjourn the meeting and just not deal with it until we have it in front of us, which would require us to be doing it during the floor session, or do we proceed with it and then, you know, since it's being drafted, at least vet it and then find out where Representative Krieger is at. Of course, the option is that we take it, we pass it, it go to the floor, it get referred back to state and federal, where it can then be vetted and changed and then come forward. And if it was a huge policy decision, then that's probably the best course. If it's not a major one and it's a clarification, then, you know, we can go forward with this without delaying the bill. But I don't feel like it's our committee's job to make that decision without Representative Krieger having given us the indication of what he would like to have happen.
Mr. Chair?
Oh, yes.
Maybe I can answer Representative Hansen's concern there or address. I visited with Representative Krieger this morning. He is the one that wrote the note for me to go to LC to get the amendments drafted. So we have discussed this. He wrote the note to get it drafted, and that's when I came and talked to you. So he's aware of what we're doing anyway.
All right. Well, that helps. Representative Boone?
My question, maybe from Paulette, why is this necessary? Is that because it alleviates the Department of Agriculture from having to do all that work to prove it? Is that
well, the wheat growers, when they looked at the amendments, Mr. Chairman, Representative Boone, they were concerned that if a manufacturer decided they wanted to bring an additive into the state, and they found a distributor who was willing to add the additive to the anhydrous ammonia, and it got out on the crops without the scientifically valid information, and they don't have any at this point. They've conferred with them. I mean, we've spent a lot of time with them, and they don't have it. Then it becomes a problem for them when they want to sell their crops. If they can't justify that it's a safe additive on their consumables.
Can I just follow up? Just, I guess, so the Department of Ag isn't designed to do that sort of thing, then?
No, it's a
manufacturer.
Go ahead, Paulette.
Yeah, it's a manufacturer's responsibility to make sure their product is safe before they bring it in and ask us to use it. So that's where we want to put the responsibility.
Well, Mr. Chair, then I would say if I would hate to have something like that happen and vicariously mess up the wheat export. Would you have it dumped? It would just be sitting on the port docks, and you'd have to find another buyer for it.
Well, if you could.
If you could.
Mr. Chair, yes. Just a couple of quick notes about this issue. These sections were taken directly from a bill that Representative Patty Smith introduced and had multiple public hearings on in her agriculture committee. And so I would also suggest that Representative Patty Smith have the opportunity to take a look at these amendments before we move them, because I really think what we did in the work group was relied on the policy hearings that Representative Smith's committee had and just took almost verbatim what their committee determined and placed it into this bill. And so I would be interested to know what, if any, discussion was had in Representative Smith's committee about this particular issue. We had no policy discussion about this in any of our public hearings on House Bill 2485 because nobody came forward with any policy issues on this particular piece of the bill. So I would further suggest that Representative Patty Smith get an opportunity to take a look at this. The other possibility, I'm looking at sort of the calendar and wanting to get these bills on their way. And so the other possibility, of course, is that we can fix this piece of it on the Senate side, which is another option that's out there. And then we could have a more full policy discussion.
Thank you. Representative Hanson.
Well, the committee would still have members of the Department of Agriculture and users who are growers of agricultural commodities. I would think if a manufacturer wasn't certified and was, you know, coming forward with a product that was going to create problems, that those two representatives on the committee would be aware of that and would highlight it. I think this is maybe a little bit of overkill, but I'm not. I'm just a little. I will probably support this, but I would like to see the amendment before I be ready to vote on it.
Okay. Well, we have an option of either delaying this and recessing, waiting for LC to have it drafted, going over it, talking with Representative Smith, which is a reasonable suggestion, or passing it as it is now without the amendment and assuming that could be taking place over on the Senate side. And,
Mr. Chairman, you make that decision. It matters not to us. And in response to Representative Hansen's concern, I think the wheat growers and other ag commodities who sell consumables, they just want to make it very crystal clear that the manufacturer is responsible and for what. Presenting the right information, and it may seem like overkill, but their commodities are pretty important. So, thank you.
Okay, I'll tell you what. I'd like to. Are there any other questions for either of the two on this amendment? If not, I wanted to go ahead and take a brief recess and get guidance and advice by those who are over me, and then. I will reconvene in just about 5 minutes. That'd be right. Thank you. Reconvene our committee. The amendments that have been referred to have been prepared, and we're waiting for copies of those. And so, what I'll do is we'll go ahead and recess on House Bill 2485, the work session, and open work session on House Bill 5174, which deals with the funding bill as a companion bill to 2485, and then we'll come back to the other bill in just a few minutes. Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, on page 2 of the memo, there are 5 items, which I've already gone through in terms of the funding bill. The number 1 is the 2.5 $1.5 million for of general fund as a special appropriation of the e-board for the drug courts. Number two is a staff position at the Criminal Justice Commission to develop, administer, and evaluate drug court grant program. $942,000 of general fund for the existing drug courts in Benton, Marion, Malheur, and Multnomah counties. This money goes to the Oregon Judicial Department, and it funds nine positions, 7.75 FTE that already exist. $40,000 goes to the Department of Agriculture for what you've been discussing in the past couple of minutes. And then finally, $88,143,000 goes to the State Police for increased demand for forensics lab work related in this bill and 907. And I also mentioned there are two budget notes here. I will mention that in the second budget note that there is some concern by the Judicial Department about the wording, but they said they would work on it on the Senate side and talk to the two co-chairs, since these have both already been approved to the co-chairs. With that, Mr. Chair, there are the recommended actions are at the bottom of page 3 of the memo.
Are they still conceptual since we have them? Or is this as
they're conceptual just okay. Because they're not in LC
form. All right.
Okay, Rep. Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I would move that the committee amend House Bill 5174 with the conceptual amendments as described by Mr. Wilson, and that would be the first motion.
Representative Hanna moves that we amend House Bill 5174 with the conceptual amendments outlined by our LFO analyst, Mr. Wilson, which provides funding to the specific agencies. Is there discussion on this amendment?
All good then.
All right. Is there anyone who objects? If not, House Bill 5174 is so amended. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move House Bill 5174 as amended to the full House Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation, including those budget notes as discussed and listed here.
Representative Hanna moves House Bill 5174 as amended to the full House Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation, including the budget notes. Is there discussion? There is. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Certainly I'll support this. I have a sense it's not adequate, but it's certainly better than any other alternative. I think it's got to be said, though, that when we look at the overall impact and cuts that we've made to public safety infrastructure, both during this session as well as previous session, these become incredibly inadequate in terms of even, these don't even come close to making up for the cuts that we made in May and June. And if we're looking at a whole system that promotes public safety and a system that's adequate to deal with things like meth, you can't keep eroding the basic infrastructure. We're going to be giving a little bit of money to DA, to the Department of Justice for DA, to assist DAs. At the same time, in the DA budget, we cut significant support to assistant DAs across the state. We're adding money for post-prison supervision and treatment for people leaving the correction system. We cut 100 treatment beds out of the correction system when we passed their budget. The thing that probably is most concerning to me is how we deal with the funding for treatment. And we talked earlier when Mr. Wilson said of the $2.5 million general fund special purpose grant, this is to both promote and drug courts and grants to actually create them and work on the mechanics of the drug court and treatment. So we assume that it's going to be somewhat less than $2.5 million will actually be earmarked for treatment. In the human services budget, we cut 6.7 out of treatment, they're possibly running into an impact of maintenance of effort that could cut even more out through the rebalances. And then as the Oregon Health Plan has contracted over the last couple sessions and went down from its peak enrollment to the current enrollment, we've lost $28 million in treatment for A and D treatment for people that are no longer covered by the Oregon Health Plan. The Oregon Health Plan was the principal vehicle for providing drug treatment for people in the drug court system. And that's a tool that's lost, and I don't see, other than a portion of the $2.5 million that could be used for this purpose, I have real questions whether that's going to be adequate. We hear the rhetoric that, well, there's only so much money and there's only so many things we can do. Well, 10 cents a pack cigarette tax would fund a meth program that would be incredibly adequate. So we're making decisions, but we're not really solving the problem. We're just kind of massaging it a little bit. But with that being said, these are still important activities, and I'll be glad to support.
Grateful for your support. Other comments? Is there objection to the motion, which is passed House Bill 5174? None. It was now House Bill 5174 goes to full committee with a to pass recommendation. That ends our work session on House Bill 5174, and we reopen the work session on House Bill 2485. And I have before me, and we're waiting for copies to be made.
Need a drum roll.
So, the proposed amendments.
Did you want me to carry 5174?
No, we'll have Representative Hansen or Hannah carry it. I think that we only have a certain amount of time in our meetings.
We're going to have
plenty of time for editorial comments.
And we'll morph both of your faces and both of your names.
That's right. That's
you know this is going to be on the signing side.
Did that say dash six, or does it say conceptual, or what will the...
Okay. It'll look different.
Or a... Dash five, dash six, and then it's just to get the motion right.
It'll be on there.
Yeah.
I'm going to recess...
We're just standing at ease. You want to be at recess? We'll have a brief recess.
That's good.
We're now handing out copies of the proposed amendment -6 to House Bill 2485. And by the way, we're reconvening the work session on House Bill 2485. LC has added also a few extra lines, which includes an amendment that we have not contemplated in our discussion thus far. And so we're not going to deal with that. That's something that can be brought up on the Senate side. But what we're focusing on is whether or not we're going to amend House Bill 2485 to incorporate the changes in language that have been set forth by Paulette Pyle to this committee a little earlier. And so if we can take just a moment to look at the -6 amendments to see if they do what we understood that they're to do and what has been discussed to this point.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hansen.
Question. On the second page, line 1, on page 14, delete lines 1 through 5. Mm-hmm. Does this relate to, has that been deleted as part of section 21, or did that relate to...
Let me pull the bill out and we'll take a quick look here.
Mr. Chair, you would want to leave that line 1 in the amendment, looking at it, because it it basically lines 14 through 18 of the amendment replaces those lines. So you're basically getting rid of
lines 19 through 24.
Yeah. You want to get you in the amendment, you'll want to get rid of lines 19 through 24 and keep line 1 of on page 2.
Let's turn to that provision that says delete lines 1 through 5 on page 14 of the bill. Okay. I see. Because that is part of what is being amended. All right. So.
You ready?
Almost. Let me just read for a second here.
Page 2. We're keeping line 1.
Right.
Where is
this one, yeah.
Then go to the bill. Go to the bill page 13 and 14.
Page
13. Yeah, same place.
Okay.
But see the second line. Where's that? Is this what
this is? The end. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see this. You gotta leave that line because that's the replacement.
Oh, okay.
Did that relate to
the No, it only relates to the bill, not to itself. And so we're looking at the very beginning of the amendments. It says, look to page 13. So we're at 13, and we're deleting 21 and inserting 21A.
And this is 21A.
Okay.
Yep, we'll have to.
You are correct.
Yep. Have to get rid of lines 1 and 2, too.
Okay. Now, so we're going to focus solely on deleting lines 40 through 45 and line 1 through 5 on page 14. That's the relevant language, and we're replacing it with what's set forth on the dash 6 amendments as lines 4 through 18. Any further discussion on these amendments? Representative Hansen?
I think I'm ready.
Excuse me. I did it again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hannah, I'm sorry.
I am prepared to make a motion for which I would like all of you to carefully review the language. I would recommend to the committee that it approve House Bill 2485A-6, looking at the amendment itself, using lines 3 through 18 on page 1 and page 2, line 1 only.
Representative Hannah moves that House Bill 2485 be amended with the dash 6 amendments, specifically only those parts of the dash 6 amendments which are composed of lines 3 through 18 on page 1 and line 1 on page 2. Is there discussion?
Representative Hansen. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would be more comfortable if the maker of the motion would change his motion to move to suspend the rules to allow us to consider this conceptual amendment. Because our rules say no conceptual amendments unless the rules are suspended by two-thirds majority, which I think we're all anxious to do that. But I think it's a pretty important point of order.
All right. Point of order. Would Representative Hannah accept a friendly amendment to his motion, and that the motion actually would say that we suspend the rules to accept a conceptual amendment to this bill?
Yes.
Is there objection? Hearing none, rules are suspended. We're now open to have a conceptual amendment to House Bill 2485. And Representative Hannah, your motion.
Would you like me to repeat the motion?
Yes, please. You're getting good at this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would make a motion the committee approve House Bill 2485, including the Dash A6 amendments using lines 3 through 18 on page 1 and line 1 on page 2 of that amendment.
Representative Hannah has moved that we accept as an amendment to House Bill 2485 those portions of the Dash A6 amendments which are composed of page 1, lines 3 through 18, and page 2, line 1. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, House Bill 2485 is so amended.
A5. We have to do A5 separately.
We haven't done number 1 yet.
All right. Mr. Chair, yes, Mr. Chair, I would also like to recommend to the committee that we amend House Bill 2485A with the A-5 amendments.
Which are at the back of your packages, committee. And
which have been discussed by LFO.
President Hannah has moved the Dash A-5 amendments to House Bill 2485.
Mr. Chair, to review what these are. Line 3 makes it clear that the drug court monies in the grant fund are to expand capacity and not just to continue capacity for the new drug court grant program, and the rest of the amendments take out the appropriation section that is currently in 2485 because you're doing that in 5174.
Okay. Is there discussion on passing the Dash A5 amendments? Is there objection? Hearing none, House Bill 2485 is amended with the Dash A5 amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that House Bill 2485A as amended to the full House Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Hannah moves House Bill 2485 as amended to the full Budget Committee with due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative Henson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been critical of the dollar amounts involved in the amount of money that we're earmarking for this effort. I think the policy work has been excellent. It's probably the highlight of this session is the work that's been done on the policy side in terms of bringing this package together and making significant changes for the way we look at meth and the ingredients that are required to meet it. So I'm not, my criticisms of the attempt certainly don't apply to the things that we need to do in terms of getting a handle on the meth crisis. Maybe I, just on the overall package, I need to lower my expectations somewhat because the total effort of faith without good works is doesn't get us anywhere, but at least the faith part is pretty good.
Further discussion. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Hannah.
Aye.
Representative Hanson.
Aye.
Representative Wiseman?
Aye.
Chair Richardson?
Aye. I'll carry the bill to full committee, and we'll ask Representative Krieger to carry it to the floor. Assuming it gets to full committee. Is there any other matter that needs to be talked with the committee? Now, thank you very much for your patience and all of you that are here, and Heidi especially for your help. sometimes things have to be worked, but they get worked, and we reach a better conclusion as a result. Without objection, we stand adjourned.